6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
I think players, I mean, it's funny because, like, the perception with Torts as the coach is that players don't play for that guy. He's a jackass. And then some players are like, oh, he was the best coach I ever played for. But I think both of those statements are true. But I think that players that played for him were happy they did, but do not want to any longer. They're like, I'm glad I had that experience, but I want to move on.
That's true. Yeah.
That's kind of where I think, like, that, like, those roads meet. And when I look at free agents, I think those guys would say, well, if I was, you know, on my ELC or younger or developing in this league and I had Torts, I could see value in it. But as a 28-year-old or whatever, as a 29-year-old player, you know, I don't want to fucking go through that. And I think that's where the rubber meets the road. And it's just like, they're not going to want to come here. Even now, again, I guess, shit. I mean, if the player's looking to, I guess, to cash out on a final contract, the Flyers are going to pay him three times what the market is. Maybe you're in that position, but I mean, are the Flyers even capable of pulling something off like that? Are they going to just go hog wild on one guy? Probably not, but yeah, I think that I do think that Torts is potentially an impediment for free agent signings. I do. Not yeah. that the team is ripe for that, but I think he's an impediment.
Yeah. I don't think he would, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Tortorella. I really genuinely have no idea what to make of this guy when it comes to what his role is, what he's doing, where does he hang around? Like, what is I don't dislike him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's done a lot of good. There's been a lot of positives. He's fucking, the fact that he holds his grudge against Sanfilippo is awesome. I'm a big fan of Petty. Like, he seems like a decent enough guy off the ice, you know, with his animals and stuff. But I sure. just don't, I don't know what to make of him when it comes to this kind of stuff. You know, he clearly doesn't want to play any of the prospects. Like, he's boxed out pretty much everybody. The way he handles these guys, like, this is the kind of shit that you're going to look back on in 5 years and go, yeah, you failed because you didn't integrate anybody. Because you couldn't get anybody in free agency to play for you because Tortorella's here. You know, I just don't know. Your head coach should not be at the absolute crux of everything that goes on with this organization, and somehow he is. And I don't know.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same spot, Dan. I'm kind of confused about what his role is right now here, and I do see some pot. Like, I generally do like him in certain situations, like, for sure. I don't, again, and I've said this, I don't necessarily think that this is the right situation for him right now. With this particular team, and I'm confused about what he's doing and what his role is at this point with the Flyers. It's just odd. It's an odd mix for me.
See, I think that out of all the young players, Tyson Forrester has definitely learned and taken steps as the season has progressed and has continued progressing. Like, he's looked really, he's been one of the few bright spots for me in the last, you know, month or so, or a couple weeks anyway. As this goes on, though, like, next year, is he going to have a clean slate with Bobby Brink? Or is it kind of going to be more of the same?
They already have 12 forwards under contract. If he can't get him in this year, why is he going to get him in next year?
See, and that's kind of where I'm questioning. Like, and I love Torts. But I think that people, the fans, because of the wins and the quick, cheap progress that was made this year, it's really easy to get on board the Torts train and to just believe and bow down to everything that he says. And listen, he's funny. He does, you know, off the wall things. He called Morgan Frost a toilet seat. You know, he did all kinds of stuff. Remember that one? And then there, the other stuff, like people like went berserk when he got suspended and fined. And it's like, guys, I know he's a Flyers coach and I know that it's all Flyers fans, but the league cannot let a coach tell a fucking official, I'm not leaving. You ejected me. Fuck you. I'm staying here. I'm sorry. They can't. They cannot allow that.
Yeah.
Whether it's justified or not. And listen, Torts was right. There were soft calls and they weren't going his way. And he was upset about it. And I get that. But a coach cannot tell a referee, you know what? I'm not leaving. Make me. That can't happen. And there is no defending that. You could say, oh, it's not fair that they fined him 50 grand. Yes, it is. Like, imagine the referee is in charge of the game. If players say, you know what? I just high stick the guy, but I'm not going to the penalty box. Fuck you, ref.
Get security out on here.
I make more money than you, so take Ike. No, the referee is the one that's in charge of the game. And you know what? Sometimes they do a lousy job. They're humans. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not so good. Sometimes they have good days. Sometimes they have bad games. What you can't have, though, is a coach stand up and defy a referee the way that he did. Like, you can't. And it's good for showmanship. It's good for retweets. It's good for all that stuff. Everyone was laughing about it. But at the end of the day, Dan Hilferty, again, pretending to be Ed Snyder. I love what he did. I'm going to pay his fine. Yeah, no wonder, asshole. Now they turned that fine into a $50,000 fine, and they added the two games because Hilferty said that shit. The league was not happy that the chairman of the Flyers went out and said that, and that John Tortorella pulled that stunt. They weren't happy about it.
It'd be more interesting. Yes, I think those are great points, Manny. I think it'd be more interesting if like his stance, like Tortorella's stance, like meant something. It was just like, it's just so meaningless to take that hard stance with this team. I'm like, for what? Like, what the hell is the point? Like, you're gonna throw a fit on the bench right now for this group of players getting your asses kicked in Tampa? I mean, you know, like it just like it seems almost like not fraudulent. It just, I'm like,
performative.
Yeah, performative. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, for this fucking team, you're doing this, like you're blowing a gasket for this? Come on, man. Like, it just, it's almost disingenuous. I'm like, I can't believe that a human being would be that, I don't know if interested is the word, but just put it all on the line under these circumstances.
It was performance art. It really was. This is a team that was going into a gauntlet 8-game stretch where they're playing really tough teams. The playoffs are on the line. And he did that saying that, hey, guys, I got your back no matter what. You guys are my guys. I'm a player's guy. I'm with you. We're in the trenches. It's us against everybody else. And that's all great. But next year, is Brink going to get a shake in, you know, year two of the rebuild? Is Addard going to get a shake in year two of the rebuild? Is Zamula coming back?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening with these guys? Or is it going to be the same thing where it's going to be that's only and that's it?
And I think it's, yeah, I think it's also like the Torts effect is like you can only push 100% for a certain period of time before it starts to be like, Jesus Christ, this is ridiculous. You know, like you got to choose. I think it's important as a coach to understand when to choose your moments to push and when not to push. And apparently, you know, I'm sure Tortorella has some understanding of that as well. I think he's spoken about that in interviews and whatnot, but I don't know. I just still get the sense that his style overall, even when he's not pushing, he's still pushing. And it's still to an extent that doesn't, I think if I was a player, I'd be like, okay, there's certain times we do this that makes sense, but certain times we don't. And like, you kind of need to understand that. And in my opinion, I think the Torts effect will wear off as time goes on with this team, specifically next season. Once it's like, dear God, we're, you know, doing a bag skate again after we won a game 3-2 or something like that. It's like, I just see the level of responsiveness degrading over time with the way that this coach conducts himself with this kind of player group.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to integrating prospect. Yeah, I brought this up on Twitter the other day, and somebody said, well, he worked Tippett into the lineup last year. And it's like, well, that's great. But, you know, this is prospect development during a supposed rebuild. You can't rest on your laurels because you didn't completely screw up Owen Tippett. You know, and they did a good job with Forrester this year on the whole. You know, I don't think he ever was a healthy scratch. If he was, it was only once or twice, because I don't remember any of it off the top of my head. So he was there and not doing it, but, you know, he gave Emil Andre 4 games. He's been fucking up Bobby Brink all year. He treated Lexell like shit. Adder's finally in the lineup, but it's mainly because they have no choice but to play him. If someone gets healthy before the end of the year, I guarantee he's the first one out. You know, his contract converts to a one-way next year, but that's never stopped him from putting people on waivers before, you know, with Lazinski and Allison and Sandstrom. So I just don't know. Like, it needs to be a continued process. And I don't know off the top of my head which prospects are making the jump to the AHL next year, but there's going to be a couple. And are they going to be held back because now Brink is still in the AHL because they didn't fucking convert them? So, yeah, and you still have 12 forwards under contract. You know, if they buy out Atkinson, does that spot go to Brink and he's a guaranteed NHLer? Or are they going to split time between Brink and fucking, you know, Denis Gurianov and they bring back? Or Nick Deslauriers, who's still under contract, you know, serving as the 13th forward and going in every day. It's just like, the prospect development, you know, people always get so fucking angry at me every time I bring up the prospects. But on the whole, they did a pretty shit job developing this year. Emil Andre, you know, one of the best power play guys in the AHL on your dead last ranked NHL power play. And he's not even given an opportunity. Why? You know, why did it take until these injuries when Ronnie Adder to come up? I just don't understand. Lexell, again, goal scorer extraordinaire in the AHL. Well, he's never going to do that in the NHL. Listen, I don't expect, you know, Ollie Lexell to be, you know, Alex Ovechkin at the NHL level. But sweet fucking Christ, you're telling me he can't be more effective than Cam Atkinson right now? Come on. You know, give your prospects opportunities. This is the kind of shit that's going to bite you in a few years. And this coach has not done a good job at incorporating the young guys. Mm-hmm. Getting one right every year doesn't mean shit when you've got 6, 7, or 8 of them that you need to get right every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem. And overcommitting to their depth players, which they're doing, and overcommitting to their, you know, top guys, quote unquote, in Couturier and Sanheim and shit like that, you've boxed them out. And how do you go about the natural solution to doing that? I have no idea. But, you know, we'll see. You know, do they roll out the red carpet when Mishkov shows up? Do they even just chuck him in the AHL for 5 years and say, sorry, bud, Sean Couturier needs that ice time. Can't give it to you. You know, it's just, I don't know. We'll fucking see. But yeah, I, on the whole, have been very disappointed with they rolled this stuff. And I know people always get angry when I talk about this shit, but I don't care. It's the stuff that's going to fucking come back and bite them in a few years.
So in your view, does Emil Andre, should he be a Flyer next year?
Absolutely. Should be a Flyer right now.
So then with Ronnie Adder, then is it going to get to a point where they have to choose between Adder and Andre? And if so, then they're choosing Andre, right?
It is interesting because their defense, you know, New York's here is 23. Drysdale is 21. I think his birthday is coming, maybe 22. Adder's 24. Zamula's 23, who's an RFA. And then Andre is 22, I believe. Yeah, he's 22. So it's like, here you have a young blue line with a lot of potential, which is the exact opposite of what John Tortorella wants. He wants a veteran core of stay-at-home guys, yeah, of your 30-year-old Nick Seale, your 37-year-old Mark Stahl, and your 36-year-old Eric Johnson. So it is going to be an interesting little turn on this blue line now of, can they actually convert this into the future? And a couple of years, you got 2 years before Bonk's going to be in the picture. He's probably making the NHL out of the gate, theoretically. You know, like, can they actually work in these young guys to some extent? And Johnson's a UFA, Stahl's a UFA, Walker's gone.
Breer's cooking. He's cooking.
Yeah, he's cooking all right.
He's using freaking cheese that expired fucking 6 months ago.
He's making a fucking, like, a dump cake or something.
A couple of pieces of bread with spam on it or something. Just worthless.
This is so stupid. These players are so irrelevant. It's outrageous.
Can I pick your brain on something? I'm seeing a lot of talk about Cam York on Twitter. And there's a lot of people already proclaiming that Cam York is our number one defenseman.
Yeah.
And listen, he's playing heavy minutes. Like, I'm looking at his last few games here. 27, 28, 25, 29, 26, 27, 22, 26, 25. He's up there in ice time. I don't see the number one defenseman that some people are seeing. Is he improving? Absolutely. Is he being relied on in, you know, all situations and in heavier usage? Absolutely is. I still don't see the points coming for a number one defenseman. Are fans putting way too much into Cam York right now? Are they overhyping him right now?
Cam York is an interesting one because I do like him on the whole. I think he's
Me too.
Very good, but I don't know if he's a legit number one guy. He's kind of like a mix of Provorov and Sanheim. He's got the defensive ability of Provorov with a little bit more offensive leaning of Sanheim. Like, he's kind of the mix of the two. Just a big minute muncher that's going to go out there and move the puck really well. I think if he had, like, a bona fide partner to play with, he could be a real bona fide number one in his own right. Kind of riding shotgun with Sanheim. I don't know if he is able to find that level of success, but I mean, they clearly value him as a top guy minute-wise. I mean, even the average TOI is up to 22-25 in the season, which is nearly, almost 2-3 minutes more than his previous career high. So, I like York, but yeah, there's been a lot of, he's the number one defenseman lately. I've seen that take a whole lot, you know, as we continue on down the season here. And I mean, I guess he is in the time being, but this feels very much like, ironically enough, like Provorov, where you're kind of setting this guy up with the number one defenseman designation, then he just kind of sputters out as a, not mediocre, that's not fair to York, but, you know, a number two kind of guy. But yeah, I don't know what would push him over the top right now as a number one guy. I don't know what his fucking fancy stats are looking like. I think he needs a little more of everything before he gets there. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's very much trending in the right direction of being a top guy, but I think it's too early to really make that call, especially when there's nobody else in this defense that can, you know, properly tandem with him.
Yeah, I think showing more signs of dominance in particular areas. I don't think he dominates anywhere. He plays a pretty good game. Certainly valuable player to have on your team. Certainly a guy who I'd like to keep. But I don't see him dominating anywhere, whether it's offensively or defensively. I think that you need to stand out in order to be a first 1D, first pair defenseman guy, like bona fide one that is on a cup type of team.
Yeah, and I mean, it is too early to tell, I think, as Dan was alluding to, but like, I'm just looking at the ice time here, and like in February, he was doing 19 minutes and change, 15 minutes, 19 minutes, 18. So obviously after Walker was traded, he's a guy that the coaching staff has really been putting a lot more responsibility on, which again goes back to Dan, what you've been harping on all season long, is just all these veteran players are taking time away that young guys need to kind of develop their skills and to really see what they've got. And we're starting to see what we've got with Cam York in terms of he's able to take that ice time. For me, he's just not producing enough points to crown him as a number one defenseman. If you want to maybe start to, you know, think that maybe he can turn into a number two, I can hear that argument a little bit more. But, you know, I don't know. I think York's doing really well with all of his extra minutes and responsibilities. But I do want to see more offense in his game. Before we crown him.
Quite the biggest offensive guy, though.
That's true.
So I do kind of accept that he's not going to be, you know, the Erik Karlsson that we kind of really need on the blue line to be the true power play quarterback. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a guy, a good, trustworthy pair of hands that can regularly eat 25 minutes of hockey at night, right? There's, I mean, it was the big problem, you know, when Provorov first declined and then left was, you know, people complained about him a lot, and I was no fan of his myself, but, you know, especially, but how do you replace a guy that eats the minutes that Provorov does when, on the whole, he's going to be at least semi-responsible, right? And I do think they have that replacement in York now of essentially he's the new Provorov, just a lot less homophobic, hopefully. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, 28 points is a career high at pretty much every level, dating back to his days with the junior team in 2018. So hopefully there's more there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we've seen the best out of Cam York yet. But
no,
he definitely
for sure.
is trending in a good, positive direction. But, yeah, the coronation of he's a number one guy. It's been, I think it's a little bit too early to make that call just yet.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think it also depends kind of, I guess, who he plays with. Although, when you look at a number one defenseman,
it shouldn't really
they're
matter.
Still, yeah, they're still really good unless they're playing with, like, Mark Stahl or something. But they should still be able to do what they do almost regardless of who the partner is. And he's not there yet.
No.
And he may not get there. But
so then if the Flyers go out and try to get Sean Walker to come back next year.
God.
Like, think about what that'll do to Cam York's ice time. Because, like, we're seeing, like, in the last 10 games or so, 11 games, probably since March 1st, the ice time has been, you know, over 26, 25 minutes plus. And he's hit 28 or 29 in those games that went to overtime. But, like, you kind of want to see if he can sustain that for a longer period of time from the beginning of the season now.
Mm-hmm.
Not at the end of the season where he's been kind of, you know, coasting around at, you know, 18, 19 minutes most of the time, which is still good for a guy his age. But now that he's gotten a taste of, okay, now you're getting 26, 27 minutes. How long can he do that from the beginning of the season? Can he do that from the beginning of the season? That's kind of like what I want to see. And getting a guy like Walker to come back, like you're putting Cam York back to 20 minutes again.
Yeah. God, if they bring fucking Sean Walker back.
I would hope that they don't. I think that they need to figure out, first of all, what the fuck is wrong with Rasmus Ristolainen? And what is his role going to be on this team moving forward? Because that's kind of he's a big piece here that has been out of the equation for most of the season. And for all intents and purposes, at least given his contract, should be here long term. But, you know, I think figuring out where he fits, if at all, is a big deal in terms of where this defense goes.
Yeah, I don't even dislike Sean Walker, but the idea that you're going to bring back a one-hit wonder on like a 5x5 contract is nuts. I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
It's just, you got to shoot higher than that. You got to spend your money better. I mean, if you're dropping $5 million on a defenseman, it better be fucking good. You know, especially after committing to Nick Seeler the way that they did. So it's nothing against Walker per se, but Jesus Christ, shoot fucking higher. Don't just bring the same guy back that was already here. But, you know, I mean, the defense right now, you got Sanheim, York, Ronnie Edwards' contract is one way, Risto, Drysdale, Seeler, and then Zamula is an RFA.
Has Zamula done enough to come back? Because low key, he's actually been pretty good too.
I think he probably has. Yeah,
I think he's had his moments. You know, he's. But on the whole, I do think he's been very decent down the stretch. I think he's had his moments of very good play, and you know, he's the guy that's getting fucked with Erik Johnsson or Nick Seeler or Mark Stahl when they play. So it is, you know, kind of unfair, I guess, to judge in totality because of the lack of partner. But yeah, I would not mind bringing Zamula back for another year or two. See if they can actually make him something.
Yeah, I think they're kind of like they're not set, but they could probably get by with who's on the roster now from a defensive standpoint next year. And that's, you know, not, you know, going to re-sign Eric Johnson or anything like that. And obviously Ryan Ellis isn't coming back, but in terms of, you know, you'll have Drysdale and Sealer will be back in the lineup hopefully. And you're going to have Ristolainen unless you get rid of him. And, you know, you throw those three guys back into this, back into the hopper here. And, you know, the defense is probably adequate with that.
It's not a bad
for
unit,
at least for next season. Yeah, at least for the foreseeable future. And you invest your resources elsewhere in terms of, you know, center depth and figuring out the offense and the power play, and you devote resources there, because I think they can perform with what they have here, at least for their purposes over the next, you know, 1, 2, or 3 years.
There's no need to drop money on Sean Walker. You know,
right.
If there's not a legitimate upgrade to be had, I don't think you need to necessarily worry about the defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, Dan. I think that's it. I would not waste my time with that acquisition, given what they have, who's on the roster and the contracts they have, and their apparent ability to perform. You know, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Is the real guy to watch then Risto? Because I don't know, like, it looks like he's surplus to requirements right now.
Yeah.
Like he's missing in action. Like, do you remember that video game? And I think it was a cartoon called Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yes. Love that game. So good.
Where in the hell is Rasmus Ristolainen?
Where in the world is Rasmus Ristolainen?
This is the second time this year that he disappeared, by the way. He disappeared earlier in the year, too. He missed preseason and came back random time.
See, and like that's what I mean. Like, there's something really weird. Obviously, I don't know, but I'm getting weird vibes. With
Ryan Ellis vibes from this
thing.
Game.
Yeah.
Like, they're not saying what it is, and it's kind of like, well, he's skating, but he's away from everybody else, and it's like, yeah, that's kind of like...
They have one of these fucking players every year, whether it's a Ryan Ellis, a Cam Atkinson, a Sean Couturier, a Rasmus... It's just do other teams have these phantom annual year-plus-long injuries? It's
probably not annually, no.
I mean... It is ridiculous. Like if they can figure out a way, I mean, if they can figure out a way on like a Couturier or a Ristolainen that they get some sort of like career ending injury that they can absolve the cap hit from, then I like where that's headed with these guys. But to the extent that they're not doing that and that they're just kind of floating in and out, this is just a gigantic waste of time. Cause it's a roster spot every year that we're dealing with this every fucking year.
And it's a roster spot and it's $5 million.
Yeah.
It's serious cap hit.
So like you could try to trade him, but then you're getting peanuts because everybody's going to be like, yeah, well, the guy was injured all year. So
and retaining. Gonna, yeah.
God,
you're going to have to retain money.
More dead money.
You know, so you're retaining money on Ristolainen, and then you're going to buy out Cal Peterson, and then you're going to deal with Atkinson. Like, Jesus Christ. Like,
it's one of the things we talked about money. Back at the deadline. We did the episode, it was a doomsday scenario, whatever it was, when the idea was you're going to keep Sealer, re-sign Walker, and then have to retain money to move Ristolainen for a lesser pick. And, you know, they re-sign Sealer, Walker... could potentially come back. We're still, you know, TBD on that one. But, yeah, I mean, if they ultimately bring Walker back and Risto's out, you know, these injuries definitely are not helping his case right now. He's still got 3 years left at $5.1 million, which, you know, I think when he's good and healthy isn't terrible. But apparently it's, you know, in this modern landscape in the NHL and the flat cap era that we still are stuck in, apparently that's not going to fly. For teams to go out there and make it work. So I don't know. I don't know what they do with Ristolainen, but I guess I would not be surprised if he gets traded this summer. But man, if they have to like retain money for three, even if it's just like $1 million for 3 years, only played 31 games this year. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of Ristolainen and what they do with him, but something's going on. He's taking a trip to Ellis Island by now.
Where in the world is Rasmus Ristolainen? He's on Ellis Island.
Yeah. There's a Home Depot on Ellis Island too.
They're gardening together. Yeah, good time of year for it.
Yeah. We should get an article out or something on this dead cap money, and then, you know, you get your number, you know, whatever that nugget is. It's, you know, about 10 or so, as we mentioned before, and then you start to postulate a little bit on, okay, what does it look like with Ristolainen and this other player? And then, man, that number is going to escalate substantially. That'd be scary. I mean, really scary if this team is going through that sort of thing, because you're screwing yourself very badly.
Bad. Yeah.
And you should be like, it's just like, if you're going to have that cap restriction and the lack of flexibility there, yet trying to kind of win now and on the fly stuff, what are you doing? Like, you are just completely hamstrung. Like, you're not getting better in the draft, and you're not winning now, and you're not getting any free agents. You're not acquiring guys in the trade. It's just like, you're actually in like a worse state of stagnation than what we've seen before.
Yeah.
See, and then theoretically, with this team and the direction that it's in, you don't really need Risto right now. That's what I'm seeing over the last little bit since he's been gone. So why keep him around? If you're keeping him around, you're paying cap money that should be theoretically going somewhere else to improve the roster.
Yeah.
But you can't do that because you still got Risto, and you can't trade him because you still got to retain money. So it's almost like, fuck, this guy is like, I like the guy, but I don't really see where he fits at the moment. And it seems like it's like, you know what, it's musical chairs, and you know what, he's the guy that's standing. Like, I have a hard time justifying and telling Zamula, like, you know what, you made some strides, but you got to go, because we got to bring back Risto.
So Sealer would replace Ginning on the left, and then Johnson would leave, and Drysdale would go there, and that would still include Adderd and Zamula in the lineup. So if everybody's healthy, they don't necessarily need Risto, but I would assume they would play Risto over Adderd. So there's still technically a space for him, but I do wonder if they're just kind of done with the guy. Like, I don't think he's as critical. I don't think they view him as critical as they do Nick Sealer. So I don't know.
Is that the game plan then? Get Risto healthy for the upcoming season. He'll up his trade value. And unfortunately for Adderd, that means that he's going to be number seven. And sometimes he'll play and other times he won't. And until they find a way to actually jettison Risto, if they can jettison Risto,
I mean,
then Adderd will get his spot and he'll get his time.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that they would bring Risto back and, you know, just kind of roll with everything as is, rather than trade him and retain $1 to $2 million for like a third round pick. I would rather keep him and just hope that with the cap going up, that next year's trade deadline is a little bit more juicy in the off, or maybe even the off season in 2025, and you can navigate moving him a little easier than you could right now. Because I mean, goddamn, trade value, especially considering the fact that he's been injured, you know, for well over half the season at this point. You know, his value's got to be at an all-time low, which makes it already more difficult if people wanted them to retain salary when he was healthy and here and playing every night. So, yeah, I think you're probably better just punting the decision on Ristolainen to next summer, or at least the deadline. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to come at the cost of either Zamula and or Adderd once again getting fucked. That poor bastard Ronnie Edard. But
even then, his cap hit is so, it's not egregious, but it's so large and he has so many years left. I don't think this team has a chance to trade him unless it's in like the last year of his deal.
Probably.
I mean, when do we see like
the 2027 trade deadline?
Yeah, seriously. Like, it is so rare that we see any movement of players that have this, have a 5+ cap hit and term that is more than at least, you know, the half season remaining if it's the end of the contract, or max of like 1 year. You're not going to see a $5.1 million with 2 or 3 years left ever traded. I mean, that's just very, very rare, unless there's some sort of major sort of, okay, we're going to retain this, 50% or something, but like with Kevin Hayes deal. But the Flyers obviously can't, I guess they could, but major, major hamstring. I just think there's just way too many strings attached with Ristolainen for them to be able to move him at any point in the next 2 or 3 years.
Risto is an interesting one because I think that there's always going to be some GM out there that sees a big, mean, physical right-handed defenseman and think, aha, I need to have him. You know, like the Chuck Fletchers of the world. Like, I think those, like, in that sense, in terms of value from a position, I think he's got it. But 3 years left at $5.1 million, I don't necessarily think the AAV is egregious, but that's a lot of term for a 29-year-old, especially. Like, I just think, especially with the cap still being relatively flat for another year, I think it's a hard sell right now to try and move him as is. But, yeah, I don't know. If he comes back next year and he's relatively healthy and he's playing well, you know, still doing his Bradshaw best, you know, can they go into 2025 and at least just jettison the contract without having to eat any money off it or anything? That would be, you know, the way to go. But, yeah, I don't know if you're going to get a positive net value trade at this point with Ristolainen, even though I think that, you know, I think you'll find suitors, but I don't know if you're going to get a good value out of him, especially not the fucking first and second round pick you gave up for him in the first place.
Yeah.
What if the Flyers added the second round pick this year that they got basically for free because of the Jay O'Brien thing?
Oh, the O'Brien one.
What if they stapled the second round pick to Risto and said, you know what, somebody's got to take him. And the question is, would people start screaming and say bad asset management?
Yep.
Or would it be better served if Breer did that, but then actually went and used that $5 million and, you know what, got a forward and so, or somebody else in here up front?
I mean, I think it would look better if they do something with it. If they, you know, get rid of Risto and include that second round pick and then somehow land Zegras and that $5 million is essentially accounted for. Yeah. I mean, doing something would make more sense. If they get rid of Risto, give him a draft pick just to get rid of the guy and then don't really follow up with it, that's probably not a great look. I think they'll, you know, asset management. I don't think people give a fuck about assets these days anyway. It's Breer. He can do no wrong at this point. So, I mean, he may as well try and take a bullet or two right now and see if he can get away with it. But
it's worth a shot.
But even though everybody says that, like, you know what, after pick like 15 this year, it's a fucking crapshoot. It doesn't even matter.
That's why I don't think another GM is going to bite on that. You'd have to sweeten it a lot more. I think that second rounder is like, okay.
So it'd be
but
a first. It'd be Florida's first round pick then.
Yeah, probably. And maybe more. I just think the cap situation is just so difficult for a team to take that on. There's very limited amount of teams that can just say, okay, yeah, we're going to take on a dude at 5-1 for the next three seasons with injury concerns. It's a lot of risk, even if the player, you know, is somewhat coveted. I think you'd have to probably take back salary and probably throw in, first or something substantial like that. The deal would be very difficult.
Yeah.
It'd be very difficult. Is it impossible? No, but I like the way you're thinking on it.
Or they just keep him on the roster for the next 4 years and don't even try and question it. And
yeah, which is probably what they're going to do.
Actually, you know what? Did the Flyers did their team picture, did they not?
I think so, yeah.
Was that recently or am I imagining?
Would have been after the trade deadline, so.
Was wrist a lot? Yes, it was, because Drysdale was joking around with Cam York. I remember seeing that video. Okay, so it was recently. Was Rasmus Ristolainen at the team picture? Because remember, Ryan Ellis was not at the team picture.
Let me see.
Right.
Here. See if I can find it.
That's the tell. Let's find out if this guy's really in a fucking really hurt in a bad way.
And the
way.
Team tried to have some fucking horseshit. Oh, he's receiving treatment. He couldn't attend the picture. Like, get the fuck out of here. Receiving treatment. Yeah. Couldn't attend.
Yeah, it was the only time he could get that pelvic massage. That lovely Korean woman does that exceptional acupuncture with a nice pelvic massage.
The happy endings.
really therapeutic.
What was that place where like Robert Kraft went or something? Orchid?
A rub and tug?
Yeah. I think it was the Purple Orchid down in Florida. Like some like strip mall next to like a Subway. You know?
That is pretty crazy. He's like a billionaire and he goes to like some fucking some strip mall and goes gets a wank.
And he got out of it somehow too. Well,
meanwhile, it's like, dude, just go to Vegas, get like an escort, take her on your private jet, fly around for like 2 hours, and then pick her out of the plane. So, see you later.
He's like, oh, I know this great place called the Purple Orchid. It's in this shitty strip mall off like Route 7. It's next to a Subway and a dollar store. Like
a Dollar General.
Yeah. Be like, they got an Acme on the other side of the parking lot.
Like, I've got a VIP. Wendy's. I've got a VIP card. I get 10% off.
Yeah, like he's like there's like three private rooms in there. What the fuck?
It's only been raided by the cops 3 times in the last year. They stamp my card. One more rub and tug, and the next one's free.
You got a punch platinum card.
Member. Punch card. They got the little hole puncher.
It's like a special design, though, so you can't do it at home.
Good God, Robert Kraft. What anyway. Was I thinking, man?
How do we get on that again?
Oh, pelvic massage.
Oh, yeah, massages. Yeah. Oh, good Lord.
And then Dan Hilferty goes, you know, those are covered by my Blue Cross Blue Shield plan.
Dan.
Just tell him Dan sent you.
Yeah, the Purple Orchid is in network for Blue Cross.
It's in the Blue Cross Blue Shield family of therapeutic massage. Don't worry, it's in Philly. You can throw batteries at the chick if she doesn't do a good job. Jesus Christ. Remember he was advocating throwing batteries at Cutter Goche?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. The Blue Orchid.
Oh, he was there. That first one right there.
There you go, listeners. We were stalling for time while Mr. Esch did our
was doing some research. Yeah.
So he's in the team picture.
Me and Mike were waxing poetic about rubbing tugs and pelvic massages.
Jeez, step away for 1 minute and leave you two alone. And...
Robert Kraft.
Kraft, the Kraft Services table.
Excuse me, sir, do you have a reservation?
Yes. Would you like to see your regular masseuse? Oh, yes.
Yeah. Don't worry, they're all licensed and certified.
Yeah, they all went to college for 3 years.
Oh, God.
Good. I get this image in my head. Like, remember the Wing Bowl?
Oh yeah, dude, I went to one of those.
How crazy! Like, some of the stuff happened at the Wing Bowl.
Oh, it's crazy, absolutely crazy. I mean, I went to, I think, like Wing Bowl 25 or something. It was at the Wells Fargo Center,
and it was when I was living in the city. It was
that was the last one, wasn't it?
It was like the second or third to last one, maybe. I think they did at least one more. It was when Coolio performed.
The whole Coolio was there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was amazing. It was so fucking ridiculous. There were people I remember I got an Uber at like 5 a.m. like to go down there. And there were people that had been like they may have. I think there was a Flyers game the night before. There were people that I think were tailgating after the game through the night. It's just insane because there was, I mean, no joke. I got there at 5 a.m. and the parking lot was flooded. It's like a fucking Eagles game with people with like all these grills and stuff. It's still dark out. It's like grilling chicken wings and shit. Like it was a huge party before the sun even came up. So I think they opened the doors at like 6. And so I got in there and there was some weird ordinance where you couldn't buy beer before a certain time in the morning. So we couldn't get any beers in there, but it was pretty wild. I mean, just the, I would never take like a female that I cared about to Wing Bowl because the whole thing is like the camera guy is like just having the camera on all the women, like just having them like flash the audience on the big screen and everyone's like, fuck you, you fucking piece of shit. Show us your tits. Like, it's like really, really aggressive. And like, I mean, it was outrageous.
Dan Hilferty, settle down. You've had one too many.
Imagine. Yeah. There's a lot of, nude people, like the wingettes and stuff, like they walk out with the wings and this isn't televised. Right. So it's all on the radio. So no one ever sees any of it. But when you're there, you're like, holy shit, this is crazy.
And then didn't like some chick ate like 300 and something chicken wings or something?
Yes. So Molly Schuyler won. She was she's like this skinny woman from like Nebraska who's all like tatted up, and she's like a professional eater, and she won the eating contest.
That's impressive. They should hang a banner for that at the Wells Fargo Center.
Yeah. It was awesome. I mean, it's pretty crazy. It's just like, it's really disgusting to watch it. I mean, just basically like these contestants are sucking meat off of a bone and like discarding it with like sauce all over them. And it's really an unattractive and highly unappealing thing to see. But as you know, just some sort of, you know, freaking pig fest, it was fun to see. I mean, but there'd be too many, you know, social groups out now that would not allow something, especially on that scale, like 20,000 people.
I think the last one that I read about, I saw a picture and there was like a giant, I don't know if it was a balloon or if it was like some kind of like paper mache thing. It was like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump engaging in some kind of like sexual thing, and it was like,
hilarious.
I was like, really? Like this is like what's going on here? Like, this is a public forum. Like, this is kind of weird. It's like bizarre, it's like, the stuff that's there.
It's like it's the forum where like the most ridiculous like toilet humor and just, you know, sick talk and stuff is allowed on a big scale. So I think there is some fun to it for sure, but I think it just grew so big where it was like, look, we can't get away with this anymore as sponsoring this shit. But there's always room to restart it, you know, and it started as something that happened in the studio. So it'd be fun to just do it, you know, just make it small scale again. And before it was all local eaters, you know, it started with just people from Philadelphia. And the cool thing about Wing Bowl was actually kind of the build up to it, where WIP would have, you'd have to do an eating stunt on the air in order to qualify. So it's like, okay, I'm going to come in and eat, you know, 3 pizzas in 12 minutes and you got to do that. Or you know, some sort of thing like that. So that was always kind of cool listening as it led up to it.
So there's like people puking there, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So one of the rules is one of the rules is if you heave, you leave. So,
oh, nice.
So if you puke, then you're disqualified. So yeah.
All right. On that note, guys, I'm out for the night.
You guys have a great rest of the night and a good weekend.
Yeah, you too.
All right, Dan. Thanks, guys. All right, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Yep.
See you guys.
Good night.
See ya.